weekend.
Tell us about this.
Yes, this is. So I spoke this out a couple years ago. I don't remember where it was. I don't remember when it was. All I remember is that it's in my notebook. So I have one of my good friends. His name is Tovia Grossman. So Erev Rosh Hashanah in the year 2000. I believe it's 2000. Yeah, in the year 2000, he was one of the three people that were in the cab that went to. They were on their way to the Kotel, and they were, it was three bass guys all together, him and a guy named Todd Pollock, also a very good friend of mine, and another guy named Fivish, who all three of them were in a cab going on the way to the Kotel about 2 hours before Rosh Hashanah. They were going to go there really quickly, down to the Kotel quickly, and then come right back to base for Rosh Hashanah. And the cab took a shortcut through East Jerusalem. They ended up getting, the cab was stoned. It was the very beginning of the Intifada. It was just the day after Ariel Sharon, Prime Minister Sharon went up on, but nobody knew about it. It was a Friday. It was the same as this year, where Friday was an Erev Yom Tov. Same thing as today. And they were thrown out of the cab. They were hit with rocks. They were beaten up and everything. And all three of them have stories. All three of them have crazy stories of what happened. The story that
survived.
All three of them survived. One was thrown down a mountain. Another one was saved by an Arab. He was thrown into a bus, and the bus ran him out of there. The bus got him out of there as soon as possible. And Tovia, he was the worst off. He was the smallest of the three. He was in the front seat. They grabbed him out of the car and started beating him, and they had knives. So he was being stabbed while they were beating him up. So it's a long story in and of itself, and everything. This is a story. This is what he says. He says he sat there, and as he was like losing consciousness, completely losing consciousness, he lost his glasses. He is negative like 7 billion in his eyes. It's a horrible, horrible sight. He had no idea what to do. He remembered a Maisa from Tanakh, where Gideon tricked the other army, the non-Jewish army, into thinking that there were a lot of people in the Jewish army. Really, there were only hundreds of people in the Jewish army, but he made them think that there were hundreds of people, thousands of people, by blowing on shofars. They had these shofars, and they blew on the shofars to make it think like only the generals blow on shofars, and they had all 300 people blowing the shofars, so it felt like it was a huge noise. So Tovia screamed as loud as he possibly could, as loud as he could in his, you know, straight from there. Everybody was shocked for a second. They moved away, and he used that second to run. He was already stabbed in the leg. He was bleeding, and he was running away, and he couldn't see anything. The adrenaline sort of kicked in at that time. That's when, you know, you find yourself seeing things that you normally wouldn't be able to see. And he ended up running toward a gas station. And there happened to be an army contingent that was right there, that was on that thing. And that's the famous New York Times picture, where there's a picture of an army soldier, it was in 2000, of an army soldier that's standing there with a gun right above a kid. And the kid is bleeding all over the place. And it says, you know, Jewish soldier beating an Arab on Temple Mount. And the problem was, number one, it was a Jewish kid. It was Tovia. As he was running away from the Arabs, you see clearly that the soldier is yelling at somebody behind the kid. You see it, and there's a Paz gas thing. There's no Paz gas thing on Temple Mount, but that was in the New York Times. That was on Erev Rosh Hashanah, about an hour and a half before Yom Tov. People were able to make a call in to the Grossmans, but all they knew was, it's almost Rosh Hashanah, your son was in a bad everything, but he's okay, he's in the hospital. The next day, the New York Times came out, his uncle saw in the newspaper that his nephew was there in the picture, and he showed a picture of him being beaten up. So that was a whole big thing. Obviously, it was just ridiculous. But I still remember.
Oh my gosh.
It's an unbelievable little story. There's a lot more to it because
where is he now?
He's still in recovery. In theory, he still is not. He lives in Tel Aviv. He lives in Tel Aviv. Well, not Tel Aviv. He lives in Modi. I believe. Lives in Modi. Thank God, very healthy. He has a wife and kid.
He's not in recovery.
No. He's perfectly fine. Everything's, thank God, with him. And he calls me every year around the Sudas Hoda, because he makes a Sudas Hoda every Erev Rosh Hashanah. Every Erev Rosh Hashanah he gets around and he calls me up and he says, let's work on something to be able to say on the Sudas Hoda. So we've said something every year. We always have something that we get together every year. I've only been at four of his Sudas Hodas out of the nine. This is the ninth year altogether. Next year is the tenth. He's going to try to be in America. But I've only been there for four. But it's a crazy story. And Lamaisa is just, it's all one of the craziest things you've ever heard. Isn't it interesting, though, that he thought of a shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah, where we don't blow a shofar? We don't blow a shofar on Erev Rosh Hashanah. And he thought of that Maisa with Gideon, of blowing the shofar and trying to make the noise and everything, on a day where you don't normally blow the shofar, where you don't normally do anything like that. So what's Pshat behind that? First of all, why don't we blow the shofar in Erev Rosh Hashanah? Why don't we do it then? So the Gemara answers, kedei la'arbiv ha-satan, to mess up the satan, to make the satan get confused. So he's all confused and he doesn't know what to do. And he's like, that's a very strange thing to say. Every year the satan comes about in Erev Rosh Hashanah and he's like, they're not blowing the shofar. Oh my God, what am I going to do? Like he's just sitting there and he's like, so he's like, he's moving all over the place. He just doesn't know. Like biting his fingernails. Like, I can't believe they're not blowing the shofar. Like
6,000 years wise and picked up.
You'd think you would have picked up on it, right? Well, technically 3,500, but like.
Okay, fine.
Right, he's saying it out. We're saying it out loud. Like tomorrow, we're not blowing the shofar to confuse him. And he's just like, "Oh, really?" And the next day, he's like all these guys, all the little shadim that are standing around here, like, "Don't worry, boss. It's gonna be okay." They're like sitting there saying, "Like it's please." Like this happens every year. Every year you go crazy on this day. Come on. Like what's wrong with you? Don't you remember this? So I always heard from Rabbi Akiva Eiger that any random shofar blast can bring about complete tshuva on Klal Yisrael. Any random shofar blast. When a person hears the shofar, you immediately have these thoughts of tshuva, and you bring yourself up, and you can do tshuva. But that doesn't apply in this case. That applies by maybe the sitting down and the standing up, or the different things that we do on Rosh Hashanah itself. But we can't apply that. And on Rosh Hashanah, you don't blow the shofar. So you can't get that answer then. So how does the Arbiv HaSatan work? How in the world does this work? Okay. The Satan's very, very smart. Satan's unbelievable at doing cunning, tricky, you know, it's just like, he knows what he's doing. But we're not talking about a guy who's like a novice, you know, and just like, he gets up there and he's just like, I want to fool people. It's not what's happening. This guy is a defensive coordinator for the past 40 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, he knows what he's doing. He knows exactly how he's going to go about his things. When he sees you giving tzedakah, he makes sure that 5 minutes later you need that money. He makes sure you give away your last dollar. 5 minutes later, somebody comes up to you and says, do you have that dollar that you owe me? And you're just like, oh man, I just gave it away to somebody. 5 minutes later, you're like, oh no, now I don't have money for it happens more in Israel. I was in Israel when I wrote this. I don't have money for the bus now. I don't have any money for the bus. I had that shekel in my pocket, that extra, the 5 shekel, to be able to ride the bus. Well, now I don't have it. It's guaranteed every single time that when you give tzedakah, Kadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that that's what ends up happening. If you're Mekayim Kibbutz Av'im, if you go ahead and you do something for your father and your mother,
what?
Just trying to mess you up. So you sit there and you're just like, oh man, I wish I wouldn't have done that today. Keep it up, Amy. You honor your mom and your dad. You do something great. You buy them a gift or something. Like, the dafka that day, your dad comes up to you and says, you never do anything for me. And then you like give him a gift. And it's just like, you stood. Like, it's just like, on those days where you do everything right, the Satan makes sure that everything happens, just at that time. You dive in really well for something. You sit there and you're just like, I really need this. And you dive in and you dive in and you dive in. And you dive. I don't care what it is, ability and learning for refuah, to be able to do something in business, whatever. He'll make sure that at first you'll never get it. And not only that, but it gets worse. It gets worse at first. He'll make sure that whatever it is, you need a refuah. All of a sudden, the next day, you dive in so hard, and you sat there, and you're like, wow, I felt so good. The next day, guaranteed the person is sicker. Guaranteed the person is sicker. It might happen the day afterward. But it seems like, what? I just davened. That's what the Satan wants you to think. He wants to think that whatever you're doing, it's not going to happen. He is into getting you to be sad, getting you to regret things, getting you to lose yourself, getting you to be miyayish about your entire life. Getting to be Yayish. Forgetting about everything. That's what the Satan's all about. Listen to this. There's a Maisa. The Lubavitcher Chassidim. We're having a Mesiba. They're having a little meal outside the Tzemach Tzedek's private room. The Tzemach Tzedek was the third Rebbe. There was the Balatanya, the famous Balatanya. So he was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. The middle Rebbe. The middle Rebbe was the one in between the Tzemach Tzedek and,
really?
And the Balatanya is called the middle Rebbe. Yeah, 100%. He was right in between. And the Tzemach Tzedek and all the Rebbe's, obviously, all the Lubavitcher Rebbeim were just a huge gedolim. But Tzemach Tzedek was an unbelievable gabbal. Unbelievable gabbal. So they were having a Mesiba outside the Tzemach Tzedek's room. They were telling over Sipuri Tzedekim, stories of different Tzedekim. It was late at night, and they started speaking about certain Tzedekim, and they got to a person by the name of Remendola Miharodok. And they started lighting the candles because it was dark outside. The Tzemach Tzedek walked out of the room, and he said, who are you speaking about right now? So they said, Remendola, we're talking about Remendola. So the Tzemach Tzedek said, light more candles. You don't realize how big of a gadol Remendola was. They said, Rebbe, what do you mean? How big of a tzaddik was he? So the Rebbe sat down and he told them the following story. He told all the Hasidim over the following story. Remendola Mihorodok. Horodok. Horodok. There was a shochet who lived in Horodok, who lived in the city. He was a Talmud Chacham, and he was a chassid. A chassid not in the term of chassid shiyed, but he was a chassid in that he was a great person. Tremendous, tremendous person. Remendola went up to him and told him, you have to be very, very careful. You have to be very careful because the chitzonim, the shadim, were trying to get him. The shadim had him on their list for whatever reason. The guy did tremendous mitzvahs, but he was very lax when it came to certain other mitzvahs. So he was very lax in how he did the mitzvahs. Like, he would always daven, but he davening would talk in the middle of his davening. Talk in the middle of his davening, which we know can destroy your entire davening. Or you would go ahead and he'd always do Shnei Mikrevecha Targum, but while he was doing Shnei Mikrevecha Targum, he'd stop at a pasuk and say, hey, how you doing? How's everything going? He'd stop in the middle. He did every mitzvah. He did everything correctly, but he did it with a little bit of a twist. Tanach Tzedek told him, you have some faults. You're going to be grabbed by the shade of the Mazikin want you. So the Shochet used to laugh at the Rebbe's warnings. He used to say, like, come on, now this is never going to happen. One day, the Shochet, who was also a mohel, he was also used as a mohel, so was called to do a bris in a nearby town. They told him, we need you for a bris in a nearby town. This happened all the time. He had a special bag prepared for if he had to do a bris somewhere with his tools and everything, if he had to be called out in the middle of nowhere. So he grabbed his tools and he grabbed everything and he went to the wagon. The wagon was sitting there waiting for him. He climbed in. It started going out, but soon after they left the town, the wagon went rear to the left. Now, it is a Hasidish story. So it includes a wagon and it includes a forest. So they went straight through the forest. They went straight through the forest, and he's like sitting there, what's going on? What's happening? He's shochet. He's like yelling at the guy, what's going on? What's happening? What's happening? But the guy wouldn't answer him. They went through the forest, and eventually they came to a huge town. Huge town. They came to a large house, and they stopped in front of the large house, and he's brought in, and he was shown the lady and her child. As he was checking the child and looking over the child, the mother quickly came close to him and whispered, let me tell you where you are. You're in a place where the Shadim have taken over. This is a land of Shadim. This is not in this world. You're technically not in this world anymore. I'm trapped here because I ate from their food. I was involved with them. And because of that, I can't leave. But you still have a chance. He said, what am I supposed to do? He's sweating. He's scared because the Megillah told him something like this was going to happen. She told him, you have to make sure. She said, I was Jewish. I was a Jewish woman. I asked for them to do a bris milah to my child. Normally, Shadim don't do such thing. But they allowed me to have my request. They allowed me to have a bris milah for my child because technically I'm a Jewish woman. I want that. Do not eat anything, she told him. Don't eat anything from them. Don't accept any gifts. You take a single gift or you take any food, you're going to have to stay here. That's what the Tzemach Tzedek is telling over about Remendel, about the Shochet. So that's that. That night, hundreds of people came. They had a huge party, and they said, come, come. They told the Shochet the mole. He said, come sit down. You want to sit with us? You want to sit with us? So he said, no, I fast the night before I give a bris milah. I fasted the night before. I'm sorry, I can't do anything. So he said, what? Are you joking? You have to. Come on, you have to eat something. They tried to get him to taste something. He wouldn't taste anything whatsoever. The next day, he gives the bris and everything, and everybody eats at a bris. The mole himself is part of the whole thing. And then, the Shadim are not used to such a thing. So they all invite him over, and they look like normal people. They invite him over. They say, eat something. He said, I had a bad dream last night. I'm doing a tinus chalom today. I'm having a tinus chalom. I'm not going to eat anything for the day. I'm not going to go back. So then, next day, they said, do you want anything as a gift? We have to give you something. You're the mole. He said, no, I don't want any gifts. I did this just purely for the mitzvah. Please just send me home. They brought him home. He immediately went to the Remendel's house, Remendel Aruduk's house, straight up to the house and walked up. It ran up there. And as soon as he's about to knock on the door, the shamish walks outside the house and said, say, tome, tomar lo. Get out of here, you tome person. Get out of here. So he started crying. He's filled with tears. He said, I didn't know what to do. What am I supposed to do now? So Remendel finally, he called him in. He said he stayed there for a while. The Rebbe called him in. And he says, there's only one guarantee that you won't be brought down to Gehenna with them. There's only one guarantee that you're not going to be in their world and you're not going to be part of them. He said, you have to go back. They're going to call you back and they're going to try to bring you back. You have to go back with them and you have to go up to them and say, Eina ta klum. You have to go up to the leader, the one who's the husband of that woman. You have to go up to him and you have to say, Eina ta klum, you're nothing. You're absolutely nothing. You're absolutely nothing. You mean nothing to me. There's nothing that's there. Keep repeating it and try to mabatle them in your hearts and mabatle them in your heads. Get rid of them out of your heads. You don't want to think about them whatsoever. They did call him again. They called him in and he went inside and they brought him into the house. And the father, the leader of the house, who was the husband of that woman, the father of the child that he had given the bris milah to, was sitting down in his chair, and he said to him, he started laughing at him and said, it's time for you to come join us. He started screaming aloud, you're nothing. You're absolutely nothing. You're nothing. You don't exist. So the shade turned to him and said, you think I'm nothing? and start snapping his fingers, and the Shaddim around him do the most terrifying things. They fire out, and they start screaming, they start showing different pictures, different things in front of this guy, and the guy is scared out of his mind. And he keeps screaming out loud, "You're nothing, this is nothing, there's nothing here in front of me," and they start laughing at him, "Do you think we're nothing? You think we can't do anything to you?" They said, so the leader looked at him and said, "Who told you this? Who told you that you have to tell us that we're nothing?" He said, "Who told me? Remendola Miharodok." So he said, he called over his henchmen and he said, "Bring over my books. If this man Remendola is in any of my books, if his name is mentioned in any of my books, for anything that he might have done that he gave over to the Chitzonim, to our side, if he did anything for us, then we're going to take you and we're never sending you back. If he's not, then we can send you home." So he looked through the books. He didn't see Remendola's name in anything that he had done. Everything Remendola had done was L'shem Shemayim. He saw that he had not done one thing that was given over to Kritona that was done for a bad reason, something that was done in the wrong way. And he saw, okay, Remendola Miharodok is a true tzaddik. They sent over this guy, they sent the guy back, and the Shochet immediately went to Remendola and told over the story, told over exactly what happened. He said the Tzemach Tzedek, he stopped the story, he looked at them and he said to them, Remendola was a true tzaddik. That was a true tzaddik. Unbelievable story. The point is like this. I know that this is all based on a Gemara, whether or not you can be mevatel, it's based on a Gemara Pesachim in the last parak about what to do regarding Shaddim. We know a Malik is the same Gematria Suffolk. Chazal say the reason why a Malik is Suffolk is because when a person starts to doubt, a person starts feeling bad about what he's done, about where he is, about what he feels, this Suffolk can grab you. It starts making doubt other things. Yeush is the worst thing that a person can go through. You can't get any worse than Yeush. Yeush is giving up. You say, "There's nothing else I can do." You give up. You say, "Like, listen, I know I'm supposed to learn. I know I'm supposed to daven. I know I'm supposed to get up for slichos. I didn't. I give up. There's nothing else I can do. It's not true. Yeush is the... only the Satan that's telling you that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is screaming in your head, "You can do it. You can do it again. You can do more. You know you can. Don't give up. Don't say that. You have to have confidence in yourself. You have to be able to look at those Shaddim in the face and say, "You're nothing. You're absolutely nothing. You're not right. I can move myself up. I can bring myself up. I can do this, and I know I can do this." Then the Satan can't touch you. Then the Yitzhahara won't be able to get a hold of you. Then your whole Yitzhar will be sitting there saying, "You know what? He's right." Yitzhar is going to say to you, "You're right. I can't really get you then." And you're going to realize to yourself, "Do you know what I can do? Do you know what I can accomplish? Do you know what I can have in this world?" Because you'll stop saying to yourself, I can't. And you'll start saying, "I can. I know I can. I know I can go out and do this." Knowing is half the battle. From? Knowing is half the battle. Oh, you guys are so young.
No, I know what that is.
And they came out with a movie very recently about it, but thank God I have no type to see this one. G.I. Joe. Knowing is half the battle. That's what it was from the cartoons, mid-80s. Oh, man, guys. That Thundercats. There's nothing better than those two. Anyway, for knowing is half the battle. You know that something's out to get you. You're not going to get tripped by him. No, know that he's out there. Know that he's there. If you know the Yitzhar is there and you know there's something, you know that that's how he goes about his business, that he tries to trick you, he tries to get you to have something and whatever, and you know that after you get tzedakah, something's going to happen. After you promise God, and you do a tricky way, here you go. "I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara from 2:30 a.m. till 2:35 a.m. 2:30 a.m. to 2:35 a.m. I promise you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I won't speak Lashon Hara." Well, that's the way, right? I'm not going to speak. How am I going to speak Lashon Hara at 2:30 a.m.? I guarantee you, and I will put money down on the table. I will put 20 bucks right down on the table right now that one night you will have the phone by your ear and you will pick up the phone in the middle of the night and you'll say, "Hello?" And somebody's going to tell you the greatest piece of Lashon Hara you've ever heard before in your life. And you're going to look and you're going to say, like, "Oh, that's great. I got to go back to sleep." And you're going to hang up the phone and you're going to be like, "Oh my gosh." And you look at the phone and it's 2:32. Guaranteed. I guarantee you it'll happen. It happens every time. I sign myself up for a little Lashon Hara thing from 6 to 8 a.m. because I'm like, 6 to 8 a.m. What am I going to do? People call to me all the time before davening. "You got to hear this." It happens all the time. Of course it's going to happen. "Hey, where's this guy today?" "Oh, he's at..." Of course it's going to happen that way. You have to know what the Satan's going to do. Fool him back. Know that he's there. Be like, "I got you, Satan." And then tear him apart. Take apart his head. And Erev Rosh Hashanah, the Satan gets confused. It's very, very hard to do this on your own. You can't do it on your own. Every day during Elul, from Rosh Chodesh Elul on, we have a shofar blast. Why? What's the point of the shofar blast? To do what?
To make
you do what? To waken you up. To wake you up. Get up. Get up. Shuvu b'nei shofar chutz me'acher. It's a different Gemara. Yeah, that's a big... Don't pretend you're acher.
What does the Rambam say, though? The Rambam says...
Uru shinishinafcha. Uru is the wording of the Rambam. Wake up. That's what the shofar is. Wake up. Where are you? Usually, some people are gone by davening by that point. They didn't even know. Like, I might say it out tonight, and somebody's like, oh, they did blow the shofar this month. Totally forgot. Because we buy Elenu. Totally forgot. Oh, man, I knew I was missing something. You know, it's wake up. Wake up. What are you missing? What's going on? What are we doing in Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah, we don't blow the shofar. What's pshat? Because we sit there and we say, we shouldn't need it. Because it's Erev Rosh Hashanah. Do you realize Rosh Hashanah is tomorrow? Rosh Hashanah is tomorrow. We're being judged for our lives. But the Rev Avram Friedman, the Rosh Hashanah of Skokie, gave an unbelievable Shir Chloe today. Unbelievable Shir Chloe that went through. It was really good. It was all about the idea of Beninim and Tzadikim and Rishayim. What are these Tzadikim, Rishayim, and Beninim? The Beninim is the guy who's right in the middle. This guy who has like 50 Averos and 50 Mitzvos, and he's like right in the middle, and he's like hanging there, like waiting in the balance. What is the pshat behind Beninim? What is the word? What is the idea behind Beninim? The entire idea of what we're trying to get or what the Beninim is supposed to... He spoke that the idea is the Beninim is not bad. A Tzadik Gomer is a guy who has only Mitzvos. A Rosh Hagomer is somebody who has only Averos. And says the Mechaz Chinuch, the Mechaz Chinuch learns it. A Beninim is anybody in between. All of us. I hope none of us are Rishayim Gemurim. We don't have a single schus to our name. I don't think so. I think we might have one schus. I don't think any of us are Tzadikim Gemurim, that we haven't done anything wrong. I think there might be one thing that we might have done wrong. Maybe. We're all in the middle. We're all those things. We're all being judged tomorrow. We're all Tali Ba'omin. We're all standing there, like sitting up in the sky, waiting to be judged to see what's going to happen to us. It's happening tomorrow. Tomorrow night is when it starts. Technically, the din is in the morning of Shabbos. Shabbos morning and Sunday morning is our din for those first 3 hours of the day. If you can wake up early, wake up early. Get up at sunrise, because that's when your din starts. Can you imagine? Your din starts in the morning, and he's like, okay, where's Shri Zimmerman? Oh, he's sleeping. Sleeping until 8. I see. Can you imagine that? It's the first 3 hours where you're judged. Get up. Take up some time.
It's the whole day.
3 hours is the official din time. That's why we daven Musaf after the first 3 hours. Can't even daven Musaf during the first 3 hours. The time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges the people, there are four times during the day. The first 3 hours in the day is the time of din. And the din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu applies during those first 3 hours more than anything else.
So why can't we daven Musaf?
That's a different story. Kesser. We can go into that maybe next time. But Musaf is not to be done during those first 3 hours. Unless, if you go to a minyan, that hour and a half minyan, not a good idea. Not a good idea. You might have had better ideas than going to a 1.5 hour minyan. The idea is, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, you don't blow the shofar, because we can do it ourselves. You don't need the shofar. You don't need anybody else. You don't need anything else. It's just you. The Satan is confused. He's that confident. He's that self-confident that he doesn't need the shofar to wake him up. Uh-oh. My whole job's gone. My whole job is making spakos. My whole job is knocking down his confidence. My whole job is to say he should have no confidence. He shouldn't feel anything at all. Uh-oh. This guy is self-confident. This guy is doing it on his own. The day of Erev Rosh Hashanah is a different day. We don't need the shofar. The shofar is within us. We should be able to scream. Tovia was able to do that. And we started off with the idea that Tovia came up with this idea while he was sitting there being beaten up. He sat there and he said, this is what Gidon did. And he screamed. He screamed out loud. And he made his own shofar. This is the day. Tonight starts the day where we can come up with our own shofar. We can scream ourselves. We can do it ourselves. You have to do it. You have to have that confidence. Scare the Satan. Confuse him. Make him go down. Make him feel like there's nothing there. That's what this day is all about. That's what this day is entirely about. Don't let him think that. What?
Every year
he thinks, this is the self-confidence of the Jew. We have our self-confidence on this day. And if they use it correctly, you don't know what we can do. You don't know how great we can possibly be. We end up with a little mushel. Something that we can work on for this upcoming year. It's a little mushel over here. It was an unbelievable. It was brought down by the Arve Nachal. I originally heard it from a guy by the name of Akiva Steinman. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. Tremendous Talmud Chacham. He said the following. There was a king who had an only daughter. So he wanted to marry her off to the greatest person he could find. And this king had a very, very good friend. best friend, who was his chief advisor in the kingdom. This advisor had a son who was around the same age as his daughter. So he said, oh, we can make a shidduch. Me and my best friend can have our son and daughter marry one another. So they thought it was a great idea, but the son was an idiot. He did extremely dumb things, very, very bad things, and jealous people kept coming along and finding everything he did. They put little video cameras on him, and whenever he would do something dumb, whenever he did something silly, like he went for a drink or he went to Adni, he decided to go and be together with other people, even though he had a beautiful princess as a wife. They always had their video cameras ready. And the first thing they did is they ran to the king, said to the king, look what your son-in-law did. Look what your son-in-law did. How your son-in-law was not faithful to his wife. Look at your son-in-law and how many bad attributes he has, how many bad things he has. And they kept going up to the king and kept telling him, this is how bad he is. And each time the king wanted to punish him, each time the king wanted to say something, but each time his daughter, the princess, came up and said, my husband is a good person. He makes mistakes. He does terrible things. Don't worry about it. My husband will be okay. Don't worry about it. But the son-in-law, did not improve. He got worse. And he got so bad. One day, he became so drunk, that he was completely off. He saw that girl, took her, saw his wife, princess, cut off her arm, and threw her in a garbage heap. Cut off her right arm, and threw her in a garbage heap. And sat there, and then he ran away. Everybody was having a field day. All the guys with cameras and video cameras, they all took pictures and they brought it straight to the king. They're like, look at this, look what he just did, look what he did to your daughter, look at this. And the king is out to kill his son-in-law. What did you do? How could he do this? Son-in-law is so scared. He runs to his father and he begs his father, please, please save me. I don't know what to do. And the best friend of the king, he's a very, very smart man. He says, well, I can't go up to the king. The only thing that he's going to do is get very, very angry. All I can do is I can placate him a little bit, but this is really bad. What you have to do is get your daughter back. Go get her from that garbage heap. Bring her back. Treat her well. Get her the best doctor. The best doctor. Spend all the money in the world for it. This is your life at stake. Spend everything you possibly can and treat her with the utmost respect. Get back her trust and make her go back to her father. Make her go back to the king and to say something back to the king. Otherwise, I'm sorry, but it's just not going to happen. So he did it. He grabbed the daughter. He brought her to the best doctors. He promised her. He promised her this won't happen again. He's done this before. But he promised it won't happen again. And the king finally, after hearing from his best friend, and after hearing from his daughter, finally is placated and says, okay, fine, I won't destroy my son-in-law. I won't kill my son-in-law. The king is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The daughter is the Torah. The son, the prince, so to speak, is Bnei Yisrael. The father is Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Avos. And the bad guys who kept telling on the prince, kept telling on the son, those guys are the Malachi Mashkas, the accusing angels, the Mekatrigim that go up to Shammai. Every time we treat the Torah badly, by showing up and learning Torah, like it's just like another book, we cheat on the Torah by learning other wisdoms and say, oh man, the Torah doesn't compare to this. You walk into a room and you read a newspaper when you have tons of sfarim that you could do, and you go and you cheat on your wife, on the wife that we were married to at Har Sinai, and instead you do something else. Every time we sit there and the Torah keeps coming back and says, I want to have Klal Yisrael. I want Bnei Yisrael with me. And even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I've got to punish them. They're doing something wrong. And he wants to kill us. He wants to do something horrible to us. So one time, we'll take the Torah and lo borchu ba Torah tchila. We didn't make Derech HaTorah well. Because we didn't make Derech HaTorah, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? I'm going to destroy the whole nation. They don't deserve to have the Torah. But the princess came back. We treated the Torah a little bit better. We started the Gemaras. We had the Tanayim and Amorayim that came right after that time. We brought ourselves just a little bit back, until we were able to fix up a little bit of the design in the Torah. We can work on that. What do we do when we learn Torah? How do we feel? Make it just a little bit better. That's the idea, to build yourself up and to grow just a little bit more. And say, you know, maybe I should wear pants next time I come to learn Torah. Maybe I should sit there and I should come home. I should just learn something. Instead of just I'm going straight to the paper or going straight to whatever. I don't want to mention, you know, I heard there's something called a TV. Instead of like going straight, maybe learn something. Sit in your house, learn a couple lines, and then go. Just make it a deal. Make it something that you do something every time you go back home. That start. That's a start. That's placating the princess. And eventually we'll be Zoka to an unbelievable din. Oh, we need Mashiach so badly. We have one last band this year to bring about Mashiach. We have about 22 and a half hours left.
You can come by then?
Why not? Not supposed to come Erev Yom Tov. Let him come, and then I'll deal with the problems of Erev Yom Tov. You know, I'll deal with everything else. You know, everything should be good. All right, have a good Shabbos.